Okay, this is a session with Chad, recorded on March 31st, copyright 2011, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 1:36 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Howdy.
Hi, Ion.
Hey.
So, I wanted to clean up some of the holes that I have from my notes last week talking about triangulation. And I think I'll just run through the steps as I had put them down, and when we get to a step I'm uncertain of, I'd like to ask for clarification.
Okay.
So, step number one, pick three pairs of currency values. Each pair consists of A, the focal currency, and B, the reference currency. So that's obvious. We plot the first two currencies, A
whoa,
and B.
Whoa. Did you want correction as you go, or shall we let you spin in it?
Don't let me spin in it. Correct as
you
I gotta
go. You got to go ahead and get C as well.
Yeah.
3 points, C. Yeah.
Yeah, that's understood. Okay.
Well, that's the reason we asked, did you want it as you go, or... Yeah,
no, that's okay. Good. I just bring it up and I'll say, okay, I get it or not. So
yeah.
The next step is to plot the first two currencies on the y-axis and then plot the last currency, C, on the x-axis. Number three, create the B1-A1 tangent as the future.
Hey, Chad, the x-axis is horizontal or vertical?
Yes. The x-axis is horizontal.
So you said plot the what on the horizontal?
The C point, so the third currency, would go on the x-axis.
Just C. All right. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So step three, create the B1-A1 tangent as a future point in time, which makes a smaller triangle.
Wait a minute. You got to establish the A-B tangent first.
Okay.
You're trying to find out what A is to B. So A-B is your first tangent, which would be your A to B line segment, which... the way you're plotting it would also be the y-axis, remember?
Yes.
Okay,
the AB tangent. The AB tangent is between A and B on the y-axis, right?
That's exactly correct, but goes on eternally because everything could potentially have a price.
Yes.
Regardless of which points you're choosing on your A and B. There's more prices available that moment than just A or B. So that's your tangent goes on eternally because everything would be marked for that moment of time, wouldn't it?
Right. But in my case, AB tangent, I'm only interested in the distance between A and B.
That is exactly correct. But don't forget that your tangents are extended. The line segments go on in perpetuity.
Okay, so once I've established the AB tangent, I go to the next step, which is to create the B1-A1 tangent as a future point in time, creating a smaller triangle, which is A2, B2, and C2, with a shared C angle.
So C2 and C share the same angle.
Yes.
Two triangles, good.
Right. And I pick the position of the B1-A1 tangent arbitrarily.
You may.
Yes.
And the arbitration is based upon ease in the visual for your calculations. Meaning, if you're doing a 30-day position and you have room to do 30 blocks, that's a good way to do that. Because, see, time is a false premise, so it doesn't care how you juxtapose your second tangent, but it makes it easier for you to calculate when you're noticing anomalies after you complete the formula.
Right. So it should be arbitrarily, but based on ease of viewing and blocking it out in
To calculate, because if it's a 30-day process and you see a huge shift in the 15-day process, it may give you some information. And if you plot your second tangent based on the false premise of time, it would give you an individual beforehand it would even give you a pre-A2 valuation.
Okay. Okay, so once I've established my B1, A1 tangent, then I calculate A, calculate the angle of A by, I could use the law of tangents to get the value of the A angle, because I know the distance between the A point and the 0, 0 point, and I also know the length of the from the C point to the 0, 0 point. So with those two values, I can calculate the A angle.
Okay. And now that's mathematical, and you're mathematical, okay? But the point of laying it out that way is for the visual, so that you have a sine cosine wave from A and a sine cosine value from B, which would be, if you have a box, the opposing sides of your tangents, the sine cosine waves would be emanating from the A, which would be representative of the top of the box, and B would be representative of the base of the box, even though they would be sine cosine wave lengths.
So in the case of A being the top of the box, the
yes.
sine and cosine of A would be crossing over the A line, so that the A line forms the middle of the peaks and troughs?
That's, well, could. It depends on what your sine cosine value is, you see. But more times than not, yes, that'd be the case. Now, that also depends on if you're doing in degrees or radians. Because, look, if you've got that AB tangent, that could also be the flat side of an ellipse or a circle, could it not? Remember on the event with the circle intersecting the triangle? So that tangent was based on an ellipse. So that's not outside the range of possibility. And also be very careful, because remember, sometimes your B value would be plotted above your A value. And
right.
if that's the case, then you would invert the second tangent.
Right.
Instead of B1,
okay.
A1, it would be A1, B1.
Right, we'll leave that for later. I want to just work with the simple
A
above
I know,
B for
but
now.
That's the point. That's why we're pinpointing this, because you're getting very specific deliciously. But we want to include the potential for, well, fuck, now what? This doesn't fit the model. So this is why we put that little caveat in there.
Okay, sure. So now I'm confused about how the sine and cosine waves emanate from the A point, if they're not always going to be laid out as the A line, imaginary line at the top of the box, being at the middle.
Well,
so
no, it wouldn't be in the middle. It would be wherever it is, wherever it intersects from the value of the value that you've plotted. That's how you'd calculate it, but it would be from the angle. So it should emanate from there, but it's just the frequency or the pitch of the potential chord that you're working with could have an effect of where it emanates from. Remember?
Well, I don't get it, because if I go to the graphing calculator, it always goes through the middle of the XY axis, the sine wave. So where would that middle point be in the case of A?
Well, you haven't established the x and y axis yet.
Okay, I don't get how to lay out the sine wave for A, like where to position it when I'm overlaying it.
Okay, that's the reason we included C, because you haven't set the new xy value. The x and y value of A that's given, that you looked up to get the value, that's a known entity in a stance on a tangent. Well, and so if you're going to get the new value, or what the value of A2 is, you haven't pulled a new XY axis yet.
Okay, so once I take the value of the A angle, put it into my graphing calculator as like X divided sine and then X divided by radians, and I get the sine wave, do I not put the sine wave on the graph yet?
Yes, you may.
okay, but I don't know where to put it, like where to start the wave.
You just plot the, all you do is plot the frequency or the repetitive peaks and troughs. You just plot the peaks and troughs and how tight, how high or low they are. Just plot those on your graph. And that's the reason we said from, once you get the visual, like what we're talking about right here, then you're right. It will simply just be an equation that you plug in and you get the answer. But until you get the visual of what it is you're actually calculating, you'd have no way to know that it works without trying, like the computer trying every single
right.
possible pair.
Okay. Okay, so when I do A in the graphing calculator and I get my sine and cosine waves, and I'm looking at the graphing calculator and I'm seeing them in a certain position centered on the X and Y axis, when I bring it into my graph, do I just put it in the same position going across the zero, zero?
You may. And if you want to draw the frequency or the repetition, the pitch, that's okay too. But what you're most interested, even if you didn't actually draw the curvatures of the waves, you certainly could, but you don't have to. You can plot the peaks and the troughs so you get a visual. Now, when you do the cosine, those are going to have intersecting points with the sine wave.
Mm-hmm.
And those intersecting points are what, that's the big dot. That's the critical point that you want to be embracing, whether that's within the peak or the trough or both, because it depends on your predicated values that will set those frequencies, correct?
Right, but I still don't know where to put my A sine and cosine, B sine and cosine, and C negative sine, negative cosine on my graph.
Right,
after they're out of
because you haven't pulled the new X and Y axis yet.
Okay, so I just I calculate them, then set them aside?
Well, we'd say just draw them straight across from tangent to tangent, straight across, and plot them. Because you're taking a trigonometric value and applying it to a flat linear space. So it's no wonder that you wouldn't know where to take a frequency value and apply it to a flat linear progression.
Okay. So where do they? How are they arranged vertically, though? Are they all along the x-axis, or
just like if you didn't have a 3D model of the wave, just like what you sent out to everybody in the tutorial, you sent it out so everybody could see. They give representation of this wave going up and down, just like a heart monitor, where it goes blip, 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 blip. Well, it's not really that blip, the sinus rhythm. It's not really that. But but from your monitor, it lays it out as an up and a down and an up and a down. Well, but that's actually frequency that is circular. But the way it lays it out is a flat screen, you know, a flat value.
But you're not telling me where to put it on my graph.
Well, you don't know yet. You haven't pulled X and Y to know where it goes yet.
Okay.
So
based on the instructions I heard in the reading last week, it sounded like I had to do that before I could get to X and Y.
Well, you can. It won't change. It won't change. It won't change. But you won't. But you're trying to get the calculation of what you're calculating, and we say that's impossible until you get the new X, Y value, because the X and Y of A2 is going to be very different than A.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay. Take it from the A angle and plot it and go from one tangent to the next. Whatever wave proximity you have, plot it. Now, it won't be the final end of the day deal, but it at least will give you a representation of the top of the box and the bottom of the box.
Okay, and in the case of A, the peak and the trough, where are they vertically relative to A's vertical position?
Well, it'll be higher
or
lower. It'll be higher or lower. Because you remember your tangent, your y-axis goes on eternally. So it can be as high as that high can be. And it'll be as trough as low can be.
Okay.
There's
so what sets the vertical position of A's sine and cosine?
The frequency of the pitch. Of the value of A. Because you're pulling the sine and the cosine of A, which is a known value.
Okay, so am I adding an extra step here that making me
Yeah,
not
you
get
kind of
this?
are, but
Yeah.
it's okay because you'll use it. You're just not getting the visual of it just yet, but you will.
Okay, then let's go back to where I calculated the sine and cosine of A, and then move forward in a more efficient way than my extra step.
You're all right. You're perfectly fine and all right, because once you get the picture, and we're having to include every potential possibility. See, that's why it seems like it's an extra step, when in fact you may use that extra step. So it's easier to leave it and just know that when you pull the negative sine and cosine of the C value, then you're pulling from B1 A1 tangent back toward the AB tangent. And where that sine cosine wavelength going back toward your AB line segment, that will give you the new x and y value, because your B1 A1 will be the new y.
Okay.
See? Because A2 is a tangent and it's on the y axis. So now you have a new y. So basically, how this formula is going to work is that you're going to be basically telling the future from the past.
Right.
Because if you could pull it, if you could look back a week and do the mathematical equation, then you'd know, well, yeah, that's not hard. What was gold a week ago? Well, that's what it was. Okay, good. But if you had the way to know how that is, then you could very easily tell the future from the past perspective. And the only way you get the past perspective with the false premise of time is having new y and x value. Okay? So when you have the new, when you have the minus sine and cosine, now you're going to use the minus sine and cosine based on the previous x and y valuation, because that's how you plotted it in the first place. But now from your new equation, the new smaller triangle, when you pull the minus sine and cosine, you're going to create a wavelength going backward, and where those intersect will become your new x-axis.
Okay, on the C negative sine and cosine.
Correct. And so what? So you have the visual. Now you're setting the new set points of x and y. Well, if you knew the new set points of x and y, then you look as you've already looked from your original position where that intersects inside or outside the triangle, multiplied times themselves, then divided by the number of times that they intersect, or the frequency within a chord, the frequency, if it's 20 times, you divide by 20. That's A. You do the exact same thing for B. But that new position now is gauged upon your new x and y axis when you pull your minus sine and cosine.
Okay, so when I get the intersections off of sine and cos for A, I multiply those by themselves and keep that as an A.
If they intersect inside
Yeah.
the triangle, the
Right.
ABC triangle.
But what I'm asking is, so I lay the A's value out if it has one, if it has an intersection, then I do B if it does, and then I do C. Okay.
And then you have a new x and y value.
Okay, so if I have A value, B value, and C value, how does that give me a new X and Y value?
Well, your minus sine and cosine, your minus sine and cosine is going to be on a new tangent, the B1 A1 tangent. So it'll be the new y, because you're trying to calculate what A2 is. You can't calculate A2 on based on the AB tangent. You have to have a new tangent.
Okay, so the sine, negative sine, negative cosine of C, they're running horizontally. How can they be on the B1 A1 tangent?
They would intersect it.
They would intersect it. Okay, so, so the beginning point of running the sine and cosine, negative sine and cosine for C, where do I start that wave?
From your previous x and y axis. You plot it, see, that's what I'm saying. So that's the reason you are absolutely right. It is a simple plug it into the computer, get the answer. But until you know visually what you're calculating, you'd have no place to gauge your equation from. So you'd have no way to know that it applies.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. So it is, and that's where we're talking about when you said, okay, I've added an extra step. And we go, well, not really. It is part of the step, but it's not required to get the original visual, which now you kind of got. So we could say you could tell, we could do this formula for teaching you how to tell the past by pulling a tangent behind your AB tangent. You could pull it behind it so you could accurately tell the past. And you go, well, that's not very fruitful, but yet the history keeps changing, doesn't it?
Right. So would the future value 10 days from now be the same as the value 10 days before now?
No, it would not,
no.
Because you'd have
okay.
a new XY axis. If you pulled a before tangent,
mm-hmm.
it would be a different, it would not necessarily be. 10 days back would not necessarily mean 10 days.
Hello?
Yes, it wouldn't necessarily be that 10 days past would not be necessarily 10 days future. No.
Okay.
But the same equation would apply.
Right. Okay. So
but now notice here's another aspect now that you want to embrace here. If you notice with your AB line segment, that tangent, you're
mm-hmm.
going towards C. And if you notice from the cone side or the two sides of the triangle, they're constantly moving. The further you go into the future, the closer those angles become. Well, the lines become from each other. So it becomes a funnel. It's
yeah.
focusing to that actual pinpoint accuracy. Now, you sent out – oh, sorry. We're leading. You should be asking.
Okay.
We're sorry.
What's the point of the A to B to C to triangle? Do I apply it in any way in its own?
You will. You haven't got to that part yet.
Okay. So, yeah, I feel now like I don't know how to get from calculating the angles of A, B, and C to creating the x-axis. I feel like I'm missing a step now because I had assumed that there was I was laying down the sine cosine using the A top of the box as the midpoint.
No,
and then,
it wouldn't be.
No.
They're each individual. They won't be a midpoint until you get the new x-axis.
No, I mean A sine and cosine would have as its midpoint A top of the box. B sine and cosine would have midpoint B's bottom of the box, and
well,
then C.
And what we're saying, Chad, is yes, many times that would be the case. So if you want to start there, we say fine, no problem. But just don't throw the baby out with the wash if you find that indeed in playing in every dynamic that you can consider, that it may not be every single time that case.
Okay.
But from your perspective, it being the same, it certainly can. But we can't say that every single time, because then sometimes it wouldn't apply. And then you're like, well, what's forever for
yeah.
if it doesn't work every time?
Because it's like, how do I calculate or how do I count the number of intersections within a triangle if I don't have the three sets of waves vertically in the right position?
Well, but you will, because as you pull you're this is the trick. You're applying a trigonometric value to a flat linear experience. So if you want to use A, the center of the sine cosine being A, the angle of A, we say fine. But just
mm-hmm.
know you may have to adjust if indeed it's not. Many times it will. But we'd say pull it and then plot it, and then when you move the new X and Y, you'll notice that and you'll actually have two sets of coordinates to double-check your work. It's back in your old college days when they say, show your work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you'll be definitive, and if there's any anomaly, like the B is ahead on top of the A value, you'd adjust accordingly. And if you pull a B4 to see what it was in the past, then you also have another confirmation of the broader spectrum, because, see, those angles of C and C2, the further you go to the left of your AB tangent, that angle is going to get larger and larger and larger and larger. Well, not the angle, but the distance between those line segments, it's going to be broader. So transversely, going to the right on your lateral progression, it gets more narrow.
Yeah, more pinpoint on a specific event.
And that's what you're asking, is the pinpoint price of Okri next Tuesday. So,
yeah.
See, it funnels it down to you. And so the same thing is the case all the way through. So there's really nothing, no one hurt here. You know what A is, or you find out what A is. And all you're trying to calculate is what A2 is.
Yep.
And we find, and if you look at the words, the actual words that we use to describe it, you're trying to find out what A is to B.
Yeah, yeah.
See,
but at this point, I don't know how to go forward unless I get like a definitive starting point on where to vertically lay out my three sets of sine cosines.
Center it on A, center it on B, and center it on C in your beginning. And then what will happen, once you play with that a bit, you'll notice that the new X and Y axis will shift it, and you may find that it's not the center of A, B, and C. And if that becomes the case, if it did become the case, then you'd know how to ask to adjust it.
Okay.
You see. And you'll also get the answer of how B4 axis, the B4, A4 tangent would also apply.
Okay. So I've laid out my...
This is so cool, number one. This is getting cool.
Okay. So I've laid out my three sets of sine and cosines, and then my negative cosine for C.
Yep.
And do I just create my new x-axis at the intersections of C?
Yep.
So that's my new x-axis. Okay. So I see
and
how
okay
I write.
Now, okay. Oh, now easy now. Whoa, easy now. Hang on. Guess what, Chad? You may have the negative sine and cosine wave that would have intersection at the peak and the trough, potentially, mightn't you?
Yes.
Okay, guess what? Now you've created a dual x-axis. So guess what? You could also gauge while you're in that process.
What?
What B2 is as well.
Oh, okay. So that would be me. I could know the second currency's future value as well.
Certainly. Now, if you were in a trading world and you could pinpoint with that kind of accuracy two separating points, that'd be, you wouldn't have to do that often, would you?
No.
But now, don't, that is just serendipity. That's an interchange. Now, one thing we want to say here that'll make, because sometimes you could get tangled up, you could say, Canadian dollar to U.S. dollar, Canadian dollar to a Swiss franc, and Canadian dollar to a yen. We'd say pick three independent of each other. Don't repeat any aspect of a currency.
Okay.
See?
Okay.
Because you can do that, but now that's going to be a bigger thing. That's how you'll use that part of the equation. This is for your notes. You'll use that part of the equation when you're working on futures and contracts.
I see.
So not necessarily relevant for this conversation, but it you might shoot yourself in the foot. Because a futures contract is calculated very different than the actual price of the traded currency, as you know. Because when you start calls and puts, that's very different than actual executed orders.
Okay. We'll keep that in the notes for the future.
Certainly. And it'll show back up. It always does.
But the thing is, wouldn't it be every time that the negative sine and cosine intersect at peaks and troughs? because they're
no,
they're just 90 degrees off of each other.
I know, but not necessarily, because it's within the confines of your triangle, and that contract, that that triangle is plotted, so that triangle may
okay,
miss.
Okay, to clarify. Okay, you're talking about the intersections within the triangle.
Always. That's correct, because
okay.
if it's not within the triangulated position, the best fractal in the world will just fuck with you, because it could find you outside the triangle. Well, if it finds you outside the triangle, how can you juxtapose your position when it pinged three towers to find out where you began?
Yeah, okay. So the only point of the outside the triangle intersections is to use it as a divisor.
Well, it, a divisor and a qualifier. It's inside the triangle, the triangulated position, the concept that you're triangulating. So anything inside that is significant. Anything outside of it means that your car keys could be anywhere. Well, you don't care about where the car keys are anywhere. You're trying to know exactly inside the triangulated position are the car keys here. And if they are here, then you can know exactly where they are in a future experience, but the time you've lost them to the time you find them. Because once you find them, then you cease looking for them, correct?
Yeah.
So once you know what the value between a Canadian dollar and a U.S. dollar is going to be, you cease pining over its present future valuation or means or medium of exchange.
Okay.
Now, we know it sounds glib and simple the way we're saying it, but it really is that glib and simple.
Yeah.
But see, you have heads up on a lot of this because the actual ciphering, the values that you're calculating, see, you see that. It's rare. Many people see it from a billboard layout. But you actually can go ahead of that a little bit, and that's okay, but you want to get the visual so that you can validate what you're calculating. Because you come
exactly.
along and you say, wait a second, there's a zero value for a Swiss franc in 30 days. Ion, are you saying that the Swiss franc's not going to exist in 30 days? And we go, well, check your show your work, map your work, and then if you find there is zero value of trading one currency to another.
Okay.
See?
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about on the C negative sine, negative cosine being
yep.
the new X axis.
Yep.
So do only one of those intersections on C have to fall within the triangle in order for it to be the new X axis?
Yes, but there again, that would be rare. It would be
okay.
rare, but yes, because
what's
remember,
more most often the case? What's most often the case that they
the
all
wider
of
the line, the longer the line segments from C to A and from C to B, the further you go backward, the wider it becomes. So the more capacity you have for multiple intersections. It's reverse from your A to C, which is getting more narrow in relation to the B, C. You're going the opposite direction. So it is the case that only one has to be. That's okay. But the likelihood of that is very slim. But you actually would have, the closer you get to the AB tangent, the more potential for intersection you have.
Okay.
You see? See, because your proximity is broader rather than more narrowed.
Okay. What if none of the C's crossings are within the triangle?
Then you've got to turn the funnel upside down. If you turn a funnel and it's working and it takes something and funnels it into an outcome, and nothing is hitting, then you got to turn the funnel upside down, which is basically a way to get a pictorial for what you're discussing, because then you'd have an x-axis that would be by default. If you have no new x-axis, then you'll have to calculate what the new y. You'll have a new y-axis, but you'll have to use the x-axis as a default. But again, that would also be rare. But depending on how you plot your actual values, it is a potential. Okay. Now, you also got another little key thing that's very important for your visual. Remember your AB line segment?
Yeah.
Your B1A1 must be absolutely parallel to your AB.
Yeah, that was clear last time.
Okay, well, because that you didn't say that, or we may have gotten ahead of you. And there's a purpose for that, because when you're dealing with the false premise of time, okay.
Yeah.
When you're talking, if you have, no matter what the AB line segment is, it has to be absolutely parallel, because that's the way you gauge the false premise. Of everybody has the same 24 hours and 24 hours in a day and 7 days in a week, blah, 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 blah. That's the way you gauge it. So they must be parallel.
Okay, fine. So once I have the new x-axis, then where do I find A2 within the new x-axis?
The same way that you use to calculate your A to your A2, you've divided that multiplied the number of times that intersect inside the triangle from your sine cosine of A, and then you divided that by the number of intersecting points between your two tangents. That gives you a value.
For A. Yeah.
Then you do the exact same thing for B.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, now, once you have those values, you could, in the simplest form, you could apply that equation or answer into your A2, B2 new triangle. But that's in the most simple, basic aspect, okay? So what you would do then is you would pull a sine cosine from that value, what you got for your calculation, and you'd pull a sine cosine from it, future, into the little triangle, which does the same thing. You basically are adding another tangent. And then guess what? You have a future value, which will prove your A2 value precisely.
Oh, so you're talking about a third tangent now.
Backwards or forwards. But you finally got to the part of the equation where you do something with your A value, your B value, in regards to your new XY axis.
Right, so then I'll have an A value and a B value of the future that I, you know, that would reflect the 10 days from now value of those currencies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct. And that's your proof. See, that's where you take it to the nth degree to validate it. But once you get your equation that you plug in your little mathematical calculator thingy, you won't have to go through that actual place. It'll be a sine cosine plot, a b sine cosine plot. Then you go minus.
So the A on the new on the B1A1 tangent and the new x-axis, is it graduated the same way, or is it a condensed
grid? It would be, but it would be a shorter span of time, wouldn't it?
No, hold on. When you say it would be, okay, the new x and y axis that I've set up, does it have the same dimensions as the original XY, where one block equals one by one?
Well, that's our point. The answer to that would be a shorter amount of time, because you carefully did the AB, B1A1 to mark out the number of hours or days as a block. Well, now you've actually created a much smaller triangle for pinpoint accuracy of calculating your new A2 value. So it would actually be a much more condensed representation of what you call a time. And that doesn't matter, because with the new X and Y axis, you can basically calculate to go with pinpoint accuracy what the angle of A2 would equal, because it would include every angle, especially if you do it in degrees, of your sine cosine values.
Okay, so when I've got my new x and y axis and I've plotted A2's point, or not A2's point, that, wait a minute. See, now I'm confused, because it's like A2 on the B1, A1 tangent line, where that's plotted as a point.
Mm-hmm.
Does that represent the currency value in the future?
Yes.
Okay.
But don't stop there. You're done. That's the answer. But you're not done there, because there's more you can get. So keep going.
But right now I'm looking at, like, the crossing between where the A2 corner point is and the B1, A1 tangent. That's already at a specific value. So let's say
that's
at 200. Like, does it mean it's always going to go down that much?
Not necessarily, because you remember, you multiplied your intersecting points by themselves and divided by the number of intersections in total. So that's going to be your value, you see, in the new position of your x-axis. So time you multiply a great big number and then divide by a great big number, and then you apply that to the plot that from your new x-axis, you may find that it's only a thousandth of a penny difference.
Right, but the position of, once I draw my B1, A1 tangent, and it's crossing and creating the little triangle and gives me an A2 point,
mm-hmm.
That's already a point where that currency's value
is. It is not, because you don't know what the new x-axis is.
Okay, so when I do know where the x-axis is,
then you'll know the precise value of A value is to A2.
But is the scale the same?
Define scale.
Okay, so let's say on my
No, it is not the same. The scale is not the same. No, it is.
Okay, so how do I determine the new scale?
You won't have to require the new scale. Once you have the new x-axis and you pull the values of your calculated A and your calculated B and you plot it, it'll give you exactly. And what you may find is that it doesn't, the A2 value may be plotted on the new y is exactly across the top of the box from your A. And if it plots exactly across the top of the box from A, because remember the tangents go infinite, you'll say, in 10 days there won't be a penny's worth, a thousandth of a penny difference between a Canadian dollar to a U.S. dollar from today to 10 days from today. You plot it on the y-axis. Because your new x is going to move all those positions. And so then it would be nothing other than like on your Forex charts, you know, with the computer screens, where if it goes up, it goes up a pip, and if it goes down, it goes down a pip. Well, you're basically creating that computer screen, so you can just now look and see where A plots, and then you look and see where on the Y tangent, the Y axis, and you have a new Y axis, and you plot that equation, and you go, okay, it was at a dollar, and here it's at a dollar and a penny. Okay, my A2 value will be a dollar and a penny. So that means that it's going to take an extra penny to buy a dollar in 10 days, if that's the way
you're... Yeah, but with the B1, A1 tangent, working with that future value, the triangle is always going to be smaller than my big triangle.
It makes no difference. Where you plot the value is what the new value of the angle A2 will be.
Okay, so then once I have the A2 angle, I run the sine cosine again? And plot the intersections?
You can to prove it. That's exactly correct.
Okay.
But once you calculate, once you play with this a little bit, you'll find that that is, it won't be a fool's errand. It'll be you'll validate it, but you'll know very, very, very precisely exactly where it is, and you can stop, place your order, and you're done. But if you want to be even more specific with it, do the exact same thing that you did already, pull an even more future value, then you're basically giving a past reference of vibrational frequency to prove your new A2 value, wherever it plots on the new Y-axis in the correct proportion from what the new X-axis is.
So the third, you're saying that the third one would be the past representation?
No. The third one would be a further future representation.
Further future. Okay, and
but
how do I know?
But once you know far, far future, then guess what? The present future becomes the past representation from a vibrational standpoint.
Yeah.
You see? Now, and I know that sounds weird, but remember, liars always figure, but figures never lie. And if you can plot vibration, which is not linear, but if you can plot vibration linearly, it absolutely applies. Okay, now one more little thing now. As you're playing with this, something we talked about the circle and how the circle would be turned sideways, which would give you your tangent. So we would be describing like the cone shape.
Yeah.
Just like the angel chart, it's never a perfect circle because people talk about the markets. Now, you're asking about the market, Chad, so that's what we're talking about. But we can just as easily do temperature.
Sure.
Okay.
But we'll stick to this, yeah.
But stick to this just so you get it clear. It's never, ever, 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 ever circular. It is always between two points, which would give you an elliptical version. Never a perfect circle. It's always elliptical. Because you have two points, A and B, and let's say you have two centers of a circle. Well, you can't have two centers of a circle. But if two positions are known and you tie a string longer than those two points of A and B, and you take a stick and you start and you pull the string out as far as it'll go, and you follow the stick and let the string guide you, and then you get to the other point and you stop, you flip the rope on the other side, and you take that stick and you follow it around the other side, you won't get a perfect circle. You'll get an elliptical, just like your rotation of the Earth around the sun. But
okay.
That's also
You're not talking about wire whisk ellipse. You're talking about
Talking about an oval shape that's not a circle.
Yeah. Oval, yeah.
Yeah, because see, when you have two center points, that's why we say that radians are okay, but degrees will serve you better. Because we're talking about the degree of the shift of change of vibration in a future reference of a false premise of time.
Yeah, but I kind of have to enter degrees into the graphing.
You can. You can. We prefer the degree. That's fine. But then
I have to enter radians into the calculator.
That's okay too. That is all right. But then once you get your values and they're known, then it will also work from degrees. And then you can double check it. Because if it works in radians, it'll also work in degrees, or it may not work at all.
Yeah. So if I'm in my graphing calculator and I graph the sine of A, if it's got this sine wave that's going like the peak is 1 and the trough is -1.
Yep.
How do I apply that onto my graph? Like what is the representation
of the x-axis? Use the x-axis that is established. Your original x-axis. Plot it as it is. Because you don't know your new x-axis yet. You see?
Okay, but I mean the amplitude. Like, What does 1 in the graphing calculator represent on my graph?
Well, if you're talking, it makes no difference. It makes no difference because you're going to take those plotted values and multiply them times themselves. So you nebulously chose your spans of timing between your two tangents. So then the up and the down is just the repetition or the pitch. So plot it as up. Roll spans of time. So if it's up one, go. If it's up one, go from A and go up one. And if it's minus one from A, go down one.
Okay, so it is a bit arbitrary too?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is. Here's what's not arbitrary. The frequency.
Okay. Yeah.
And the frequency has nothing to do with time.
But the frequency, between the AB and the B1A1 tangent, frequency of peaks, let's say, would be different depending on how big I scale up my waveforms.
Makes no difference. The proximity won't. The number of times they intersect won't. Makes no difference if you make it big as a house.
Really? Okay.
Their intersection points will be the same.
So should I keep making it big enough that the intersection points fall within the triangle?
No. No. If you have no points that intersect within the triangle, that's okay. That makes life simpler. Now you have nothing to multiply times if you have no points that intersect. But now here you go. A may not intersect, but B might. And if that's the case, then that's fine. You have nothing to multiply time itself, okay? And then 0 divided by the number of points equals not much, you see, or itself. So then that becomes then, from you would plot that on your new x-axis on the new y-tangent, which is B1A1, and once you plot that, you'll get the exact value. And what you'll find, when nothing intersects, there'll be very, very, very minimal change in price in the future from the past. But now that was a little inside. That was a little free part. We'd rather you get it and you prove that point rather than us tell you that point. But you'll find that that's the case. There'll be a flat or very little change when nothing intersects inside the triangle.
Okay. Does the aspect ratio of my graph make a difference? No? Okay.
No, because it's vibration. All you're doing is plotting vibration. That's why we could allow you to nebulously set your spans of the distance between your two tangents. See? It makes no difference. It still applies because frequency or vibration or wavelengths won't.
Okay. So
is that cool? Think about that now. That's pretty serious when you get it.
Okay. Okay, so when I get my new A2 value, is that the actual value of the currency, or do I have to multiply it by the Maybank CD 14-day?
Okay, now that's where you will, yes. Now that you'll use that in your equation. That's your, that would be your tetrad. That would be where you divide it by that of your new, once you establish your new X value and you have a new Y, then that's where you would then, of course, divide that difference by your AB equation. That's what puts you, that's the point that puts you inside the triangle. That's the fourth point of a three-point triangulation. You see?
So does that fourth point fall within inside the triangle every time?
It most certainly would.
Yeah.
It most certainly doesn't have to, but it most certainly would.
But it would serve me better if it did?
Well, it will.
Yeah. Because that's like normal, like GPS triangulation.
Exactly. Because if you're outside of your triangle from where your variable is calculated, then you're going to be onto a different triangulation. And if that were to occur, all you would do is you would basically lengthen or shorten your time. Okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. And then you could, well, we get it all, so it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Then what happens? You just expand or make your divisible larger or smaller. But it's so rare for that to be the occurrence. As you say, it would have to fall inside your triangulated position. Otherwise, you'd be triangulating a whole different conversation.
Okay.
Good.
So just to recap that, using that external reference of the Maybank is for the tetradic fourth point that makes it a proper triangulation for the center.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you have a fourth future point that's already established in the future because Maybank is already a day ahead of you.
Okay. So
That's why that works. But what if you were in Malaysia and it was the same day? Then guess what? We would say go at it from the reverse, and we would go with a New York value.
Okay. And then would I have to reverse them back out after I got
that
value?
That's exactly correct. Very, very good. But either way, it works because see, it's got to work for those, you know, Kuala Lumpur crowd like it does for us.
Right. So that new triangulated fourth tetradic point will represent the actual value of my A currency.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And it also will verify it. Because you'll actually have a good idea once you start your equations. But that's what validates it, you see. And that's the reason. Now do you get why the visual was kind of important? Which you're not so visual. You're actually just, what's the fucking formula? Plug, 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 click, click, click. Okay, here's my answer. Next case.
Yeah.
You like that. But the visual here is significant because you'll get an answer. And this way you'll have a way to see how you achieved your position because you're taking a vibration and plotting it into a false premise of a lateral, linear, flat dimension.
Right. So what's the underlying dynamic that makes it possible to find the value of A
times a false premise? So vibration occurs.
Yeah.
Yes. You learned as a kid, learned how to tell time. Now you know how to make time tell.
So that's it. Just by using this arbitrary position of a false premise of time, you pick any three reference currencies for three different currencies, and bang, you can triangulate.
Do.
Yeah. That would definitely
remember that was going to be the downfall of non-physical, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Great.
And it is the downfall of non-physical, and you know why?
Why?
Because once you finally become a god, you won't need us.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we've already given Ion personally his eviction notice.
Yes, I'm going to be evicted from the global village. That'll be great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Hooray.
You've done just a minute. I mean, an hour, right? 59. You got some more, another couple of points, Chad?
Yeah. So you brought up this ellipse into it to make this cone.
Wait. Don't get tangled up. Just know your AB line segment could be the flat representation of an ellipse. If you take an ellipse on a flat piece of paper and you turn it sideways, it would have the same tangent. But the reason that we add the ellipse in that circular cone, and you'll look, when you looked at the event, you saw the triangle coming out and there was this great big oval, that would be your tangent. Because guess what? You may have a broad spectrum of a triangulated position that would be inclusive from an absolute pinpointable place of time. Okay?
Okay, so...
So if you were calculating how many rads of radiation that were going to end up in your driveway, you would want to do that from an elliptical standpoint, pulling your tangent from the flat side of an elliptical line segment, all right? And you would pull it from that aspect to calculate how much radiation you were going to have in your milk.
Okay, so what I'm seeing on my graph is the sideways representation of that oval, which in the event on the tablet, his isn't sideways. It's like the circle is flat.
Good. That's exactly correct. That's exactly right. So if you have, if your AB values are broad and encompass a large capacity, okay? For example, what if you were triangulating the cotton crop next season? You would use an elliptical reference of point of the side of your triangulated position. But now, that's from a dimensioned reference point, okay? So you would use that oval ellipse to calculate, but if you lay that on a piece of paper, it's flat and becomes the y tangent. And that's the reason we said that the radians are okay, but you will also want to do it from degree. So then you can decide the worldwide production of corn or cotton or a regional geographic production of corn or cotton. You see?
Okay.
That's fucking so, cool, big boy.
Yeah. So with the C point, so if the A and B, the tangent between them, or sideways representation of that elliptical oval. What's going on when it gets to C? Is that just representing the infinitesimal progression into where there is...
Well, infinitesimal to an end. Infinitesimal to an end. Because when you're talking about a false premise, you can stop it on a dime. So it makes a cone or a funnel outcome contained within a vibration. So it's just that representation. Now, remember, we said you could make what your work is as it is, and you could go behind your original AB line segment and do a B4 tangent.
Yeah.
So you could enlarge it larger behind it, and that'll become handy. Now, most of the average bears won't get that, okay? But you very easily will because you're like, well, hell, if it works from this tangent to this tangent, I can go back to a previous tangent and can even get this ups and downs and steps and make my trades within and out myself over a span based on exactly what they were and say, I can make 10 trades a day if I could plot what they were every single minute of every single day based on my distance between my tangents, this could be, I could do 1 month of trade and be done.
Right. Because in the example of the B4 tangent, that would mean that my big triangle that I've been working with would be the little triangle. My big triangle would be the little triangle of a larger B4 tangent.
Right. So it constantly then becomes focusing down like a funnel. And so even if you hit, good, but it works both ways, you see. It works both ways because it makes no difference what the angles of A and B are as long as they're always going towards C from a linear progression of a false premise. It always funnels it to the point.
But wouldn't that mean when you go backwards that you're becoming less pinpoint in your accuracy?
No, it wouldn't because the line segments of the angle of your original C2 won't change.
Line segments of the original C2.
Yeah, remember you had ABC, and you shared the angle with C2.
Yeah.
Well, it makes no difference if you make that AB line segment, that AC line segment infinite. That angle was still the same.
Okay. So
it gets broader. It does get broader. It does get broader. But that broadness just gives you more room within your new set value of what X is.
Right, but the question is, if we're moving to a wider space between A and B as we go back into B4, how do we bring proportionality into the equation to account for that?
You set, it is already set because the distance, the same distance between your AB tangent and your B4, A4, a 4, B4 tangent would be
okay.
Equidistant.
Okay, so it's because of because the angles, the ratio of angles don't change, so
correct.
That accounts for proportionality.
So now now here we go. Now you're getting something else here. Now look at the words here. The aforementioned B4 status.
The aforementioned B4 status, okay.
Yeah, so if you pull a tangent previous to your AB original, that's the aforementioned B4 status. So that'll tell you A4, B4. Because the retrospect is not based on your AB tangent. It would be based upon your B1, A1 tangent.
Right. So if you can tell all the prices in the past, I mean in the future and in the past, you wouldn't need a database to keep track of the past records because you could just run this calculation.
But now look here. Now here's where it gets even more fun. You look at that database that you're so proud of. It's not that accurate.
No, it's not.
They change shit all the time. The bonds were worth this, but then there was some problems and there was this, and so they really weren't ever really worth that ever anyway. You're like, what?
So
now you're changing history, not with this formula.
Yeah, the graduations change for sure. So this would make the database obsolete.
That's right. And Bob would say that it already is.
Yeah.
Now and he wouldn't know why he where he would come from that, but Bob would say that it already is.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but he wouldn't. This now.
And I would know why. I would know why. You wouldn't. I would know why.
Right. But this now. Now you can have a conversation with Bob, and you can prove Bob's right. And that's always a good day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What fun! Make good notes. Now, number one, let's just be clear.
Yeah.
We are telling you because you had the capacity to ask.
Mm-hmm.
We are not telling the whole wide world. Now, does that mean that you have to be selfish and not share? You certainly may. Okay? You certainly may. Because
I'm keeping this one to myself.
But it's okay. Because you're going to apply this in the elliptical angel chart.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to apply it there. And so it will kind of come along, but some of the far-reaching aspects that you've been able to achieve is not necessarily the fodder for conversation, meaning tell them what you know and let them figure it out for themselves. And if they have another question, tell them to ask Ion. Let's do what I did.
Yep.
You see? And that way you don't get crossways with it. Because, you know, why should the essence of your creation fuck somebody up?
Yeah. Yeah, understood.
Very good. And if they ask, then, of course, no problem. And then in the broad spectrum, fabulous. Because James is desperately trying to work it out for no other better reason than he wants to get to the soup to nuts of the process, you see. And it's logical.
Yeah.
We get that. No problem.
No, I understand it's an individual thing. It's an individual kind of factor.
Otherwise, okay, because otherwise if that was not the case, what you're saying is I'm a more powerful creator than you. And that's a trap.
Right.
You don't want
yeah,
to
exactly. Yeah.
Okay? You can't do it without me, business.
Yeah.
See? Good. Therefore, we are totally, happily, deliciously Pythagorean.